Welcome to the Rogue's Cell podcast. And as always, my name is Farouk Bello. I'm the host of the podcast. And today's episode, I have with me Anne Gates, who is the founder and creator of Exercise Works, which is an organization that is determined and at the forefront of using movement as a means of prevention and treatment for diseases. Now, that you see how I said movements as opposed to just exercise. Well, that will be very clear later on in the podcast episode. Now, for those who are wondering who Anne Gates is, she's actually one of the reasons I started this whole podcast. She's one of the people who provided support for me during my early stages of getting this off the ground and figuring things out. Now, Anne comes on this podcast to talk with me about movement, exercise, and why people don't exercise. If you've listened to the previous episode of my podcast, I've talked about how to exercise. Now we dive a bit further into the why. She challenges some of my thinking and makes me realize some things that, you know, may not have been the forefront of your mind when you're thinking of exercise and movement and physical activity. So I do hope you enjoy this podcast episode with Anne, and she will introduce herself in a second so you can get a proper diagnosis as to who she is, why she does what she does, and what is her main motive behind the crusade for movement and preventing diseases. So, as always, I hope you enjoyed this podcast episode, and I hope you listen till the end of it because this is just part one of two. So I present to you, as always, Anne Gates. Welcome to the Rogue's Cell podcast, Anne. So we have Anne Gates, who is the, I don't know what to call you, the champion, the founder, the maker of Exercise Works, who, well, if you're familiar with Exercise Works, you know it's a very big thing and it's been promoting physical activity, exercise, and in multiple of different ways. So very glad to have you on the show, on the Rogue's Cell podcast, Anne. So I'll let you introduce yourself a bit so that people can know who you are and, you know, what you do.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me, and it's a pleasure to reconnect with you. And I'm very happy to answer any questions and discuss what we do at Exercise Works, because this was something that I set up in 2010. I'm actually a qualified pharmacist by profession and have been for the last 37 years. But in the late 2008-2009, I realised there was a real gap in exercise as a medicine, as a therapeutic option for patients, but also in terms of population health. And I think that came about because I had been a director of strategy in the NHS. Okay. I'd worked in various change agency modernisation jobs. So I was an ex-Strategic Health Authority head of strategy. And so I was very much used to managing big projects and looking at population health and also being very, very tuned to patient need, patients' goals, what they wanted out of life, what their circumstances were. And I'm very grateful because really that was on the back of some excellent experience that I had working in secondary care in the Derbyshire hospitals, but also in primary care. And at that stage, and I'm going back 20 years ago now, we were very much forging. I was the equivalent in pharmacy terms to a first contact practitioner. Okay. So I became head of medicines management in a primary care trust. So all of that experience culminated in a bit of a eureka moment. And I remember it well. I was literally stepping into my house, having been exercising. And bizarrely, I just thought, you know, exercise works. Exercise works for everything. And although I'm a pharmacist, I realised that medicines come with, well, regular adherence, you know, concordance and side effects and other aspects of life. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love medicines, but I'd always been a pharmacist that optimized medicines. Yeah. So when people say, oh, you must like, you know, you must like, you know, recommending medicines and things like that. Yes, of course I do. But also I equally liked taking people off medicines. So my background was very much in cancer, on the cancer wards and on the general wards, but also in surgery and anaesthetics. And then in primary care, I very much, you know, sort of learned a lot about optimization of medicines in the community. So running massive programs, patient group directives and that sort of thing. But it was this moment when I decided around exercise works, and I haven't looked back really, and I haven't had much time to even how all of this started. It was just like one of those things slotted all in place. And so very early on, I was very lucky. I got some opportunities to work with some great people. And we also connected a lot at that stage, or I connected a lot with physiotherapy, exercise scientists and researchers.
Yeah.
And it all just came into a melting pot, really.
Okay. And I can imagine that's how you've been involved. I can imagine, as you know, for someone like myself, especially, I think one thing you said, exercise is medicine, is something I like a lot and I push myself. To faults and to extents, if I have, for example, back pain or something, I would always leave, you know, medication as the last thing. Painkillers, I would do. I'll try everything else. You know, I try exercise, and I find that exercise actually works as a good painkiller for me. And I think most people would also find that to an extent. You know, sometimes getting moving and doing some actual physical activity actually works as a way to help you as well. But the interesting thing with you particularly and exercise work is the pharmacy, which is you know, mainly drug oriented and medication oriented. Which is a vital role, as you know, or as we all know already, to pushing away from that more into, not necessarily, but more into focusing on exercise and you've kind of made your exercise work a big thing in the sense of, you know, it's a platform promoting people, you know, get up and get moving as much as you can and showing the evidence behind why it's more so important, both short term and long term, because that's something I always tell people. And you know, I have my sister is a doctor and my dad's a doctor, and we had this deal, what's it called, a whole like a moment on a family meeting where we're just talking, and I'm saying, you know, I don't like hearing excuses about not exercising. And I know people always say, well, it's because you're a physiotherapist, and you know, you can always, it's always easier for you to say. I'm like, either being a physiotherapist or not, I think it's something ingrained in my head that it's, you know, I don't like finding reasons why I can't, because I think you can always find a reason why you can't do something, especially with exercise. And when the health benefits, both short-term and long-term, are so important, it's a case of if you could see yourself in, I don't know, for example, 50 years, 20 years, the quality of life you could have by just exercising changes dramatically if you don't and if you do. And I'm going to make some blanket statements occasionally because I'm not going to use the extreme, but there are extremes in every case, but in the general population. And for you, is that something that like kind of drove you to push exercise more? Seeing, as you said, medication does have its side effects in most aspects, and you know, but exercise is more of a natural way to live, I don't know, quote unquote, a healthy life. I put that in quote unquotes.
You see, I think it's interesting because although I was a pharmacist, we were all trained in health promotion.
Yeah.
So my skills naturally morphed to providing a holistic, personalized approach. And also very early on in my career, I was steeped in some of the social determinants of health. So I became interested in poverty. I became interested in ethnic minority issues within communities, you know, poor access to healthcare, poor access for children to access, you know, services and physical activity options. So all of this came together and I got quite a good strategic footing on that. In terms of individual patient care, I realised very early on that there was a gap in the market. Mm-hmm. In terms of how we promote exercise, how we enable communities to have opportunities for people just to do some physical activity. I mean, the WHO launched last week, so this podcast is really timely because they launched the brand new WHO physical activity guidance and recommendations and in sedentary behaviour for the first time in 10 years. So I first came on the back of the original guidance, and now it's been updated. But I think the problem has been is that we try to be too pedantic, and although I do love my definitions as a pharmacist, I felt that the definition stuff by Casperson is a real hindrance. Okay. And I know I speak about this a lot. I think we got ourselves into a pickle over what was exercise, what was physical activity, and what was movement. And I think it's interesting because since our editorial in the British Journal of Sports Medicine, where we actually called it out and said, look, you know, this needs to be a movement for movement. We need to be talking about movement. Okay. I mean, the guidance has even stopped using the 10-minute bouts now. So it is the strapline for the World Health Organization is every move counts. Okay. And for the UK Chief Medical Officer's physical activity guidance, it is some is good, more is better. So it's encouraging patients, communities, and the population to do things that are meaningful within their own context. But I mentioned things about poverty and the social determinants of health.
Yeah.
And I think as healthcare professionals and organisations, we forget that they are some of the biggest factors. So, you know, when you start to listen to patients, it's not because they don't want to exercise, or even special populations, you know, with cancer patients or people with disability. It's the research has been done, and it's not that they don't want to exercise. It's somebody facilitating that conversation, which I absolutely, my passion is 100% in healthcare professionals supporting that role. And I think it's not just for physiotherapists and occupational therapists. I think everybody from consultant teams to doctors, nurses and allied health professionals have an important role, not only in hospitals, but in primary care, but in their day-to-day activities, because actually poverty and the social determinants of health are one of the biggest reasons why people don't have, you know, they make up those excuses. But actually, when you listen very carefully to patients, and I'll give you an example, for cardiac rehabilitation services, really important, really evidence-based rehabilitation post-cardiac cardiac event.
Yeah.
And I think the access for men is at 79%, the access for women is 21% or something along those lines. Wow. So that's a shocking inequity. So I come at this from inequities in my conversations. So the excuses or excuses, I used to call them, I don't think they're valid in as much as when you explore these conversations and connections which is going on. So, for example, in cardiac rehab, you know, some of my ex-Asian ladies who were hoping to access cardiac rehab, you know, the timing was wrong. It was mixed sex classes. They had to get two buses across town. And actually, I don't think that's their excuse. I think that's the health organisations and societal excuses, because we put so many barriers
in front of them.
In front of them. So, I mean, the biggest thing that I say around excuses is, I mean, even I have to put my trainers on, lace them up and get out the house before my brain engages on what I'm doing or what I'm trying to do. And it's literally, you know, sometimes I have to leave my yoga mat in the lounge, so I can't avoid it. You know, it's there.
When you see it.
And I see it, I thought, oh, yes, I really do need to do some stretching, and downward facing dog or whatever. I mean, at the moment, I have to say I do child's pose on a regular basis simply because I need to defrag my brain. But I think that when we start to understand patients, most patients want to be well.
Yeah.
Most patients want to feel better within themselves, both physically and mentally. And I think as all healthcare professionals, but particularly in physiotherapy and occupational therapy, the advocacy role and the opportunity to influence, you know, like that cardiac rehabilitation, for somebody to stand back and say, well, it's no wonder that we haven't got funding, or we haven't got a business case for this, or we haven't got the right patient numbers to support the service. Because often that is because of the complexities and the ambiguities in healthcare. So Exercise Works attempts to embrace all of that understanding, but with the premise that healthcare professionals have a unique role to change that paradigm.
Yeah, I think I agree with, I want to touch on one point we said, which is social inequalities and access to health, which, I mean, this is something that is, it's the worst kept secret in the world that, you know, some people have advantages over others, depending on where you live, where you're from, where your race is. And these are the big healthcare inequalities that play a role in, you know, they definitely do play a role in whether or not, that's a prime example, you know, when it's extremely difficult for someone from a particular area to get from there to where they need to go in terms of just geolocation and wise, like, you have to take two buses and it's not at a good time and you're not accounting for, you know, their religious beliefs and, you know, or their cultural beliefs. And obviously that creates a barrier. And then it's a very slippery slope, you know, when, for example, let's take that cardiac rehab example you used, you know, for example, that lady can't get from there to her cardio rehab, so therefore she can't even go for it and not going to be able to get the right amount of rehab she needs to get back to a good point in her life, you know, back to baseline. And what is ultimately does that lead to? It's more earlier death, you know, it's earlier mortality than it really needs to, and all because, you know, you can't get from one point to the other. And, you know, then the question becomes, I know sometimes we, you know, we point fingers and ask, whose responsibility is it? Is it because for the lack of, or better yet, lack of infrastructure, because it's pretty much infrastructure, you know, it's the way the system is set up in the sense that, you know, there isn't accommodations for these people, but, you know, you would find accommodations for these set of people more readily. You know, some people can walk to the hospital, and something I found quite a lot now, you know, I work in the community now, you know, some people live right beside wherever they need to go. It's like, oh, I always walk to the GP, I always walk to the doctor, I always walk to wherever I go. Well, some people, I've seen them literally, and I'll say, I have a doctor's appointment, I don't know how I'm going to get there. And then it brings all the whole struggle of them starting to rack their brains. Who can take them? How are they going to get there? While some other people can easily walk to wherever they need to go in about 5 minutes. Now, who's responsibility? We'll touch on the exercise thing in a bit, but to that type of question, whose responsibility is it for? Is it overall structure?
Well, in the UK, it is about the commissioning bodies. It's how NHS England and... you know, from the evidence perspective, it's obviously nice, you know, a nice guidance. So as I was saying, I think the culmination of all of this was around that it is about movement for movement. It is everybody's business, which was the title of our editorial. But also, I think it's a mind shift from moving from, you know, very, very, well, this is exercise, this is physical activity, this is leisure. I think the WHO have got it right in saying every move counts. And I think that from patients' perspectives, that's so much easier to communicate. That's so much easier to enable them to do the little things that they can do that matter to them. And generally, in my experience, patients... you know, it is a collaboration and a holistic approach to their health. And I think that that's where movement for movement came into its own.
Okay. And now we're back on that. I like that because, you know, I see what you mean in the sense of, you know, not focusing so much on defining what it is, but moving, because basically it's in essence, it's like doing what are you able to do, because any movement is better than, as like they're saying, you know, some is better, more is... What was it again?
Some is good,
more is better. And it's that promoting at least moving as best as you can. And to the general population, you know, everyone thinking, you might think, you know, taking a walk from point A to point B it's not that beneficial, taking the stairs. And, you know, I think it's sometimes the general thing is people think in short terms, and which is a fair enough thing. They might think, you know, what's the real difference? What difference is it going to actually make? And I've said this on one of my previous episodes was, you know, myself, I'll give myself as an example. When I was in uni, I keep active as much as I can. You know, I play basketball, I would go to the gym, I would walk, do all these things. Sometimes I even used to cycle, but during lockdown And I used to have a Whoop strap. So it was like a fitness tracker, like an Apple Watch. And it would tell me how many calories I was burning. Like pre-COVID and the whole lockdown, I was doing over 2,000. And as soon as lockdown started, I was noticing it drop significantly. Some days I would only do 1,000 and some 1,500. And I just started to realize, you know, it's not even only the extra stuff I was doing, like basketball. It was just the day-to-day walking that made such a significant difference. And if you could imagine continuing like that for the next, for years in your life, because I think seeing the long-term goals is very hard for people who have, you know, dealing with real-world problems now and real-world issues. So trying to convince someone that, you know, doing this, walking this 5-minute walk instead of, you know, walking this 15-minute, 30-minute walk instead of taking an Uber or driving for 5 minutes might be the thing that adds a few years on your life down, you know, 50 years. It's very hard for people to leave that. And how do you think, how can you ration it out that, you know, exercising now and doing these little things now is beneficial for someone down the line?
Because I think that actually patients are very good at helping us on that narrative. So I've met patients that are reluctant to exercise, but do they want to take their grandchildren to the park? Do they want to be able to go on holiday with their grandchildren? And the answer is yes. So this idea of regular fun movement, exercise, gardening, you know, household chores, exercise, and just getting back to the definitions, you know, walking even for leisure or cycling for leisure, that's exercise by class because it's repetitive structured programs. Yeah. So this is why I fell out with that whole definition
paradigm.
Yeah, it's like this is actually hampering progress. This is actually preventing it. Yes, in pure rehabilitation scenarios, exercise is very important for and progressing exercise. But generally speaking, we need to get people moving more. And it's funny because I've always been a walker, but like you, I've always been sporty. So I've always done lots of things, mainly sea sports activities. So I was a scuba diver, windsurfer, sailor, hiker. You know, I've always been very, very active. But I think we need to show some compassion to ourselves. And certainly this year has been a real challenge for me because I've been quite unwell with gallstones. But also to our patients as well, because it is this idea and concept of doing something that's meaningful for them. And I think that's the essence that healthcare professionals have. I think that ability to connect and understand your patient or community's perspective is really the very best of healthcare. And if we can do that on medicines, treatments, and in terms of movement, and get the message that every move counts and that sedentary behavior is also bad. So replacing time that you would be sedentary with light activities and enabling just those great activities. Yes, I think it's life-saving medicine. And I've always thought that. As soon as I started looking at the evidence back in 2010, I was just convinced as a pharmacist, it was like, yes, this is. And in some cases, the evidence was as strong as the rationale that we give out our medicines for. So I was faced with this dichotomy. How is it that we fund medicine use to quite high levels, but we're not supporting this very important holistic approach? And the other thing is, I mean, I link in with Simon Rosenbaum and Brendan Stubbs, who are really global leaders on mental health and well-being. And it became very early on that we often look in silos of for even cardiac rehab and things like that. There's a lot of depression associated with a post-myocardial infarction or cancer chemotherapy. You know, it changes people's worlds to some extent.
Completely.
So the gift of physical activity supported by healthcare professionals, the healthcare professionals making sure their services promote that in a way that's equitable, I think that became the key to me in the whole exercise medicine journey. And I don't really sign up to exercise as a medicine. People sometimes say, oh, it's medicalizing exercise. It's not. It's making sure that it's part of a holistic, personalized care package. And the only reason we're having to talk about it in those terms is to compete with all the other things like, you know, medicines and treatments and robotic surgeries and things like that. You know, we haven't got the basics right for a healthcare system. The NHS plan did talk about prevention. It talked about social prescribing.
Okay.
But in terms of patients, I think, and communities, it's got to be what works for them. What are their SMART goals? What is something that they want to achieve in life? And that's the sweet spot in brief intervention.
SMART goals. Someone would think you're a physiotherapist, and you've hung around a lot of times.
But somehow, I mean, I don't ever regret being a pharmacist. I absolutely adore being a pharmacist. But as you know, my son is a physiotherapist. So there's something that's been...
Yeah.
So maybe there was something genetically passed on through that.
No. But I think you being a pharmacist and, you know, being around, it gives you a certain perspective of seeing, you know, how the other side... Because I'm not so... As a physiotherapist, I'm not so much involved. Maybe it's just a... part of my career, I'm not so much involved in, you know, medication wise. I can read medication, I can understand what they do and how they play a role in, you know, the physical therapy side of things, but I'm not a prescriber or anything like this. But you being in that pharmacy world and seeing the, you know, effects of medication, and then able to say, you know, what about the effects of, you know, exercise, and be able to compare these two things and put them together and say, you know what, I think we're not focusing on one thing as much as we probably should, which is, you know, movements. And as you said, you know, I think it's natural, you know, physio, if you've seen physio Twitter and how they can be, you know, be pedantic sometimes on the little things, you know, what's the definition of exercise? What's the definition of physical activity? What's the definition of movement? And sometimes, yeah, I always say some things don't matter as much as you think it matters in the grand scheme of things, you know, defining that doesn't really change much. It obviously, for, as I said, rehab stages, well, you can know that's fine. But in the general sense, I think some things also confuse patients, you know, when you're pushing certain things and say, oh, but that's not physical. You're doing this, but that's not exercise. This doesn't really matter in the context of what that person is trying to achieve. As you said, getting someone moving is just as important overall. Now, with regards to, you know, using exercise medicine and that terminology and everything, I think, you know, preventive medicine, I can go down my rabbit hole when I start talking about why, you know, medication is more promoted than exercise and how there's a big business in drugs and everything like this. And that's why you want
to keep taking more drugs
because it's profitable for a lot of more people as opposed to exercise, where, you know, not many people are going to benefit off. You know, if I start jogging down the streets, only maybe people who are making my shoes will profit. But I had the same shoes for years. But that's a whole topic we can discuss, which I think is morally it's not the greatest thing. But now you're seeing more of the push, as the NHS said, you see that push for a more active lifestyle and trying to justify it as to why it's important. And if we talk about something like, you know, I know exercise works is very evidence-based. You know, you try as best you can to back up what you're saying with everything. You know, if you're talking about walking and what are the effects on walking on things like, you know, mental health, you know, depression, how that can affect, you know, your knees and everything, you always try and show that, you know, this is evidence to show that it's not just anecdotal meaning. You know, for people listening, it's not just something that, you know, we're spreading, because that's always the borderline. You know, I think some anecdotal evidence and anecdotal is can be good, but I think evidence at the end of the day is evidence. You know, it's hard to disprove something that has been, you know, scientifically corrected. But that line of, you know, people can spread out things that are not particularly true, and that's one of the reasons I started this podcast, if you remember when I started, was to try and see what people are saying that is probably not helpful. You know, I had Jack Marsh not long ago talking about how, you know, people supplements were the greatest thing, congrats, and you realize it's more or less, you know, it works for you. And if it works for you, that's one of my things. If it works, you know, keep doing it, but as long as it's not actively detrimental to your health, or it's not a negative stereotype being reinforced. And for exercise works, why was evidence based such a huge part of exercise work as you started moving it forward? Because not every other organization what's the word I'm looking for?
We are pristine on that. It is the evidence that matters to me. And that's also qualitative evidence. I take fully on board about anecdotes, but you have to manage not only patients holistically, but society holistically. And a lot of people forget that there are harms in certain things. And I think that's because of my clinical pharmacy and pharmaceutical care background. But I was trained by some of the best people in producing guidance, in producing guidance at scale, guidance at the bedside. And that was always informed by the evidence. And if we didn't have the evidence, then we needed to be brave enough to say, we can't comment because the evidence is of poor quality, or it's not reproducible, or it's not reliable. And so right from the start, it's about the evidence that drives all the things that we do, all the collaborative projects, all the system change. And people forget there's a lot of evidence behind implementation science and system change, which is the other side of the physical activity advocacy. So brief interventions, yes, very important, but also changing the system. So, you know, to be sat in a fracture clinic, which unfortunately I did have about 4 years ago, and not automatically see signposting to physical activity options, being supported on that journey, is quite shocking. Because by the time you actually get to be seen, or it's 3 months, maybe 6 months down the line. I mean, I was very fortunate. I had two lots of rehabilitation and it was great. But in terms of that evidence, uh-huh. We know, you know, the evidence for rehabilitation is very strong. We know that progressive exercise is very strong. So it was about bringing all of that in. But we now have the evidence that physical inactivity is a killer. And I'm in the healthcare business. And so once that is evident,
yeah,
and we're talking about saving people's lives, I mean, you know, when I lecture at the university, the shocking fact is 37,000 people die every year through physical inactivity. That's directly linked non-communicable diseases, immobility, and sometimes disability and untimely death. And when you think about all the fuss about COVID, you know, 37,000 deaths for COVID wasn't that long ago. And yet that had been happening year in, year out for decades with physical inactivity. So I think that those two things from the evidence are very, very strong. You'll never take the evidence-based practitioner out of me. The other thing, as a pharmacist, and I remember having this conversation, I live in Derbyshire, and parts of Derbyshire have a very high social deprivation index. And we have some areas in Derbyshire that have as high or if not higher deprivation indices than the London, some parts of London. And people forget that because it's the Peak District. And again, it's being steeped in reality as an evidence-based practitioner, knowing that those social determinants of health are playing into whatever outcomes I want for the patients. But one of the key things is that with all of that together, I had some elderly patients who were spending bucket loads of money on vitamins or supplements.
Yeah.
And it's like, buy yourself some fresh meat, buy yourself some fresh vegetables and fruit and fish. And I mean, you know, I remember being really on it early on in my career as a pharmacist and being passionate and impassioned to include that in my scope of practice. And I've always promoted health to my patients. And also, as a pharmacist, I've never recommended an inappropriate medicine in my life. So I drew the line on that. Yeah. And if the evidence, and it's been difficult, you know, there's sometimes when I was suffering with my fractures and everything else, and I thought, oh, maybe I need to have something kinesotaped because it was trendy and it was really, you know, it was like a bit of bling and it would make me feel a bit better. But actually, I looked it up. I realised the evidence wasn't good on it. And, you know, we've got to practice what we preach.
Yeah, definitely.
And so some of those aspects I think are important, and they are important to patients. So I'm not, you know, I don't ever promote something that is untested at scale or not evidence-based. There are occasions where I have been a bit anecdotal, and I actually again lecture on this in the leadership module. When I was 24 years old, we had a very severe case of a patient with a fungating tumour. And I had read about some useful antibiotic gel, which was only just coming in for fungating leg ulcers. And I applied that to my patient within 24 hours. I got the two consultants and the whole Macmillan unit to sign up. I went away to the pharmacy, literally in their sterile products. We made that preparation up, never been done before. We applied it, and the patient and his family got tremendous relief. And those occasions, yes, you're not evidence-based. You're actually disruptive innovation, entrepreneurialism in medicine. Yeah. And I still think there's an opportunity for that. But you have to write it up. You have to make sure that everything's, you know, all followed through and everything else. But I do think we need to be open to improving patient care in those circumstances. And on that one occasion, and there were many other occasions, that went on to be a commercial preparation. So I just think we need to be very open and transparent and accountable in what we promote. But in terms of walking, active travel, regular exercise, reducing sedentary behaviour, the evidence is out. WHO have produced lots of publications that have done that. So I think that conversation is a slam dunk. Now it's about how we connect, what conversations we have with our patients. And that's really where Movement for Movement is and has been for the last 5 years. And that's the future.
I hope you enjoyed that podcast episode with Anne, because this is part one of two. Now, I will release the second part of it next week. And if you enjoyed this episode a lot and you wanted to know a bit more about Anne, I will put her link in the description to both her website and her social media, which is at ExerciseWorks. It's kind of very easy to remember as well. But you can also reach out and ask any questions you have regarding any things we say, both to at Rooks Health on Twitter and Instagram, or also at ExerciseWorks on Twitter. So I hope you enjoyed the episode, and I will see you next week for the second part of this amazing talk with Anne.